You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, August the 14th, 2022. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media and the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. And I want to welcome in the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network, as well as RisingApple.com. Well, a little bit of a bend but not break intro there. I guess it's pretty appropriate. I'm coming to you, just about 15 minutes or so after the Mets completed their 6-0 victory over the Philadelphia Phillies. They take 2 out of 3 from the Phillies, and they end the homestand with just 2 losses, a 9-2 homestand. So, pretty impressive homestand for the Mets, and they surge their way into what really is the, I don't want to say the last hurdle to climb because there's a lot of season left after this week, but the last road trip that I think is going to be defining. And really, they can push both of the Phillies and the Braves back to a situation where, you know, they're going to be focused on the wild card, not the division. You know, the Braves have revenge on their mind, big 4-game series. Spencer Strider is going to, you know, do his thing and come back and prove to the world maybe that the Mets are just this lucky team that sticks their rear ends out and the ball just flies over the yard, but be that as it may. So before we get to the main thesis of the show, and I got a lot to get into today, even though, you know, the Mets are playing well and that usually doesn't make for good radio, we have The Phillies, we got to see them up close. And maybe I'm thinking here the Phillies are more of a threat to the Mets as we get to October than the Braves. I'll explain that. Is this the Mets' best chance? The more we see of DeGrom, the more we see of this team come together, would this be their best chance in Steve Cohen's first 5 years to win a championship, considering the cost of keeping the band together? That's starting to be talked about. And I got myself into hot water again on Twitter, not for the usual reasons, not for social reasons. That's usually what I get into hot water with. But because Andy Martino tweeted out about the Tatis Jr. suspension for PEDs and brought up the contract and the Lindor contract, and Lindor's having this great second half. He and Pete neck and neck to, you know, playing it at an MVP level. Lindor's having a great second season in New York, probably the best season at shortstop the Mets have ever had on both sides of the ball. And here I am talking about the contract again. But Andy brought it up. I got into a little bit of hot water with those on Twitter, and I'll bring that up. I'll do that on the way out. We've had that conversation over and over and over again. So the other big news before I get to the show is that the good folks over the Fansided Podcasting Network that have been a supporter of this program since September of last year now have a partnership with Red Circle Media. You'll notice when you go to TalkingMetsPodcast.com, the show is on Red Circle Media. What does that mean for you? Absolutely nothing. Your Apple Podcast should update. Your Spotify should update. All your different avenues to get the show should update. I was told that. I'm going to check up on that. There's always trust but verification. Because we did have, when we moved from the original, I mean the longtime home of the Talking Mets podcast, Blog Talk Radio, to Omni, which was the first foray of the Fansided Podcasting guys to, you know, provide a server, so to speak. And, you know, with this deal, with everything that's going on, I know that you guys have heard ads and whatnot. I don't sell the advertising, so don't kill the messenger. I don't really block any advertising right now. I feel like it's, hey, let's see what this is all about. You know, could you really, I got to trust my partners that they're not going to put an ad out there of anybody that's Jack the Ripper. Let's put it that way. And you'll see, here's some commercials. I don't make them too intrusive, of course. And it helps support the podcast in a small way. You know, infrastructure, microphones, Zoom costs, things like that. I always tell people, I'm humbled by people say, hey, Mike, you should charge for this thing. And I say, you know what? No. There's enough going on in people's lives where they have to pay. They got to get nickel and dimed every day. And I think I'd be humbled that I think I probably would get people to contribute, like, you know, a Mets Fix does and things like that. But with the current economy, with everything that's going on, with the fact that I feel like this has now become woven into this small community, a very robust, but still in comparison to, you know, the big networks, a small community. And it would be insincere, unfair to do that. And I think the better way is to put some ads in there that are not intrusive, that don't offend, and, you know, hopefully make a few bucks. I'm trusting the business partners on that. We're here to talk Mets baseball. So you'll see that, you know, if there was a little wonkiness in downloading the show this morning, I apologize. Or tonight, obviously I'm coming to you Sunday night. So anyway, away you go. So as I was watching the Mets, you know, and really it's funny because since we last talked, the Taking Care of Business podcast that, you know, went on after the Mets took 4-5 from the Braves, I mean, the Mets did exactly what they've done all year. They didn't have a stub-your-toe series. They bludgeoned the Reds. You know, I had a couple of scary moments there in the first couple of games with the bullpen, but, you know, they got the job done. And then the Phillies came to town, and Mets should have swept them. I mean, really a hard luck loss on Friday night. I mean, Lindor nearly won it with a home run there, and then Vogelbach, and I will not question. I know that there was some chatter on Twitter and social media about Joey Cora. Let me tell you something, and he doesn't get a lot of credit here, and we don't talk about him enough. Joey Cora has been a godsend to the Mets. He's been not as important maybe as the free agent signings, but he has been one of the most impactful coaches that we have seen come through these doors, maybe ever in my, you know, outside of a manager, maybe ever, or pitching coach. Let's take the manager, the pitching coach. Who cares who the third base coach is? Who cares, you know, sometimes who the hitting coach is? You know, the manager and the pitching coach to me are the two big important coaches on the staff because of their involvement and their fingerprints on, you know, the pitching coach, what I believe the most important part of the team, which is the pitching, and then the manager with the culture on and the bridges between the media and the ownership. But Joey Cora, I mean, last year, how many times did we talk with Gary Dissorcina how it took five singles to get anybody home? Nobody scored from second last year. Nobody. And I think there was a stat that back that narrative up. I'm not going to go look for it or fish for it. It doesn't matter. I watch the games. I know you watch the games. I heard from you. You know, nobody scored from second. So this year it's been different. An aggressive third base coach. I don't think he does crazy miscalculations, but Vogelbach hit a ball to Vierling on Friday. Marte on third, their best base runner, their fastest guy. And it took a perfect throw. And I'll tell you what, it took a good play at the plate from Real Muto, who flubbed one when McNeil tried to score on the pop throw from Marsh in the outfield today and did. Took a great play by Real Muto to do the swipe tag. Yeah, I know he was out. The ball was there in plenty of time, but you still have to because you can't block the plate, kind of come around. And it's very easy in that motion to flub the ball. And, you know, bad break there. And then they left the tying run on third. And you know, look, the Phillies are a much improved version of themselves. And this was a tough series. The Mets won a tough game. They lost a tough game. And then they had some separation today. But let's face it, it took yeoman's work by Bassett to get through the fourth and the fifth. And, you know, then there was the Joely Rodriguez high wire act that I think Buck likes. I mean, Buck has liked them all year. And we've learned with Rodriguez, he's a loogie in a world where there's no loogies anymore. Let's face it. But as I was watching the Phillies this weekend, and that's where I'm going to start, I was wondering, you know, we've seen now the Braves in recent weeks. And I know they have this new kid, Vaughn Grissom from AA. The Braves just like to throw guys up from AA and all of a sudden they're stars, right? So maybe we see a different version of the Braves on Monday. But I see the Phillies this weekend, and even in the beginning of the year, I remember when they had the no-hitter, I was so surprised that the Mets were able to navigate that because my impression and the data and the stats bring it up. The Phillies don't strike out a lot. They work counts. They may not have the best 1-9 with Schwarber out and certainly Harper, but you put Schwarber and Harper in that lineup with Hoskins, Segura, Bohm, Castellanos. I know he's having a down year. They got this kid, Derek Hall, now. I don't know if you could have both him and Schwarber in the lineup. I guess you could play Schwarber in the outfield, lefty bat. You start to get those two guys back. That's a pretty lengthy lineup that makes you work. And that was always my impression of the Phillies. They don't strike out. They make you work. And some of the data supports that. So when you look at that, and then you look at the top of the rotation with Wheeler, I know he had a bad outing today. Today he was with perfect reason why I didn't want to sign Wheeler long-term, because I always felt on the road against good teams, especially that are lefty-laden, he struggled. He struggled in 2019. Look at his numbers against the Braves and the Nats that year and the Yankees and whatnot. And, you know, I was wrong. I'm not trying to defend. I will say someone personally brought up to me Bassett versus Wheeler, and I said, you know, in a vacuum, you know, I looking at these guys, I guess you would say Wheeler, you know, because he's the better pitcher. But I think I like Bassett in a situation where if he doesn't have his best stuff, he can navigate a game. I question whether Wheeler could do that. And I still felt Wheeler long-term was an injury risk because of his mechanics. I've been proven wrong on that. He still has a couple of years left on that deal after this year. But anyway, you know, Wheeler's a solid pitcher. Nola is a solid pitcher. You know, he's had some great moments against the Mets, nearly won a Cy Young a few years ago. I know Syndergaard and really Syndergaard and Kyle Gibson are the same, you know, the league average, middle of the rotation guys that when you're playing a good team like the Mets, I think the Mets middle to back in the rotation is clearly superior to the Phillies, and they're not able to score the kind of runs that they can score against inferior competition. So their starting pitching is much better. You know, I heard what Syndergaard said about New York, and, you know, it makes sense. Syndergaard said, you know, I didn't want to come here and not be Thor. And I'd rather be Noah Syndergaard, former Met, going somewhere else where the expectations are that he's a scrap heap guy and they don't really look for the 100-mile-an-hour flowing locks. And I respect that. He was very honest about why he didn't come back. But, you know, he does beef up and at least give you a better middle to back end of the rotation. Robertson, the guy the Mets should have gotten, we've talked about that ad nauseum here, lengthens that bullpen with Sir Anthony Dominguez. Alvarado could be tough against lefties. I know Knebel's now out, but, you know, they seem to have some decent arms coming out of that pen. So when I look at the Phillies, a team that makes contact, works counts, less home run or nothing than the Braves, who strike out a lot but had a lot of home runs, I say to myself, you know, not that the Phillies are going to be able, I think, and I know everyone says 7 games with 17 to play, right? Everybody likes to bring that up. Those are once-in-a-lifetime type of situations. But they're not going to come back and win the division. That's not what I'm saying. They're, 11 games out now. We have to play in the Mets this week and then losing a game in the standings. But I think come October, you know, the Mets are going to play, hypothetically, if everything stays the same, either the third division winner or one of those wild card teams. Probably no, the number two seed, they're going to play probably a wild card team in the second round. Well, maybe not. Shouldn't say that. Maybe not. No, they may not. I shouldn't say that. But they could very easily face the Phillies or the Braves in a five-game division series after the first round bye that they'll get, because they won't have to play at their current pace in the wild card round. Big advantage for the Mets, who could line up Scherzer and DeGrom. And I say to myself, you know, who would I rather face? Now, the answer is probably the Phillies. By that time, Harper will be back from his finger injury. But I think the Mets actually may match up better with the Braves, even though they have a much better bullpen, better close. No, I mean, Robertson's pretty good, but they've got two guys in Iglesias and Kenley Jansen that have been elite closers. Robertson has been, but he's less so the last couple of years. You know, they have a good rotation, the Braves, as well, and the offense is powerful. But I think the Mets could work the Braves' pitchers deeper and get them out of the game and then figure out the bullpen, because bullpens are always, you know, no matter how good your bullpen is, I'd rather face your bullpen than Max Fried or Strider or Charlie Morton and go on and on and on here. And I look at the Phillies and I'm like, well, Nolan Wheeler, that'll be a little bit tougher. They go deep into games, especially Wheeler. He has been, even those latter years of the Mets, he was a guy that gave them innings, even after, you know, the 2 years off from Tommy John. Think about the coddling that goes on of pitchers. And Wheeler was one of them prior to Tommy John. It did nothing. I still remember a game, I think it was in 2014, where he was getting criticized, Terry Collins, for pitching Wheeler too deep. And like at pitch 100, he shot out of the dugout. Like, if he didn't get to the mound in time, that, you know, somebody, you know, Wheeler was going to drop dead on the mound, God forbid. It was the silliest thing. I remember saying, this is where pitch counts have gone crazily wild. But I look at the Phillies with those two guys, with an improved bullpen, the ability, I know they're not great defensively, so that's maybe where this tails off this point. But you look at that, and you look at the close games and how the Mets had to work, and they worked hard against the Braves, but I felt like the Phillies, even without two of their big bats, without Schwarber, who had one pinch hitting appearance, and Harper, they made the Mets sweat a little bit more than the Braves did. And I'm like, in a short series, they may neutralize the Mets a little bit better than Atlanta. Now, I may be crazy here, and I may be, you know, talking out of my you-know-what, and you're probably saying that, and I don't think I have a declaration here about that, but it is something to look out for. And look, this was a critically important series. You could say, oh, you know, the Mets could have had a stub your toes series. They were very easily close to that, but they grinded out, especially after that tough loss on Friday, a couple of games to make sure they kept pace with the Braves and didn't fall below that six. They only lost a game to the Braves. I think they came out of New York with a six-game lead, went up to seven in the loss column, down to six. So they haven't really lost any ground. The Braves haven't lost since they left Citi Field. Now they come home. Couldn't get any help. And I think that's the way it's going to be the rest of the year. The Mets have an incredibly easy schedule in September. But you know, I talk about stub your toe series. There's stub your toe months. These guys, you know, these teams, when there's players playing for, you know, either a contract or a roster spot or to prove they belong in the big leagues, they could be extremely dangerous for a night. And we know that. But I think if the Mets could work through this week, and they really have to look through this week particularly, kind of like they did the month of June with the West Coast craziness, where you just want to survive in advance. You know, you got four in Philadelphia, four in Atlanta. Could you go 4-4 and not lose any ground? Could you split both series and just keep everything so that a week from now at 6 o'clock or so on next Sunday, August, what, the 21st? Yeah, the 21st. We're still talking about a Mets team that's 11 up on Philadelphia and 6 up on the Braves. And now you're talking about 5 weeks left to play or so with the Mets schedule. Yeah, they got the Dodgers. They got the Subway Series again. I get it. There's still some tough games. And we talked about how tough August would be. But you get through this week without any kind of momentum changing series, like 3 out of 4 or 4-game sweep, you're in pretty good shape. And you could start to look at October in a way where you're going to be one of the top two teams and you're going to get a bye. You still got to finish the deal. But this is the next real push. You may not have Guillerme. We didn't get an update on his groin. And they're a little short in the infield right now. But, you know, look, what you saw this week, this Mets team is dangerous. This Mets team is every bit a championship team as anybody else in the league games. Every bit as the Yankees, who have been lauded all year and have struggled mightily in the last couple of weeks. They've really struggled for a while, but they it seems like they still kind of have the doldrums since the Subway Series. And, you know, this might be one of their best chances to win a championship. Oh, it's probably their best chance to win a championship since 2006-ish, really. And I'll get into that after the break, but got to feel good. DeGrom is on another planet. Scherzer doing Scherzer things. Bassett is settled in as the number three that we had him in. A guy who's a number three that could give you top of the rotation performance. Walker and Carrasco have been, at times have pitched like top of the rotation guys, but are not your typical fours and fives. They're probably threes on other, you know, teams with less pitching. I mean, those guys very well would be, they're better than Syndergaard and Gibson. The Phillies would love to have them, you know, and sometimes you could argue they're as good as Nola, who could be inconsistent at times. So it's just something to think about. What would you prefer in October? You know, who's a bigger threat? The strikeout team that hits a lot of home runs, or the team that has some powerful bats, plays bad defense, but has more swing and miss pitching out of the bullpen? I mean, Sir Anthony Dominguez has had an incredible year. I mean, they almost got him on Friday. Robertson is an experienced closer. They have two starters who could go eight, so they don't have to mess around too much with the bridge innings. I mean, in a lot of ways, Nolan Wheeler probably will go deeper than Syndergaard, DeGrom, Scherzer, and Bassett. So there's more chance that the Mets' bullpen can blow things than the Phillies' bullpen. Just something to think about. It is a very interesting point. All right, let's take a quick break. When I come back, as the Mets continue to roll, are we seeing their best chance to win in this first 5 years of Steve Cohen's stewardship here as the new owner of the Mets? I know that that was one of the goals he had put out in his introductory press conference, winning a championship his first 5 years. Very difficult, as you know. Right now, the best team, which at one point, I don't know if the Fangraphs odds have been updated, which were the Mets, was about 17% to win the World Series. So you got basically a 1 in 5 chance to win the World Series. That's pretty good odds if you're betting, but still bad odds when you want to talk about the rate of failure. But this team, very well, everything come together. New manager, good energy, everybody buying in. League not all, I mean, league is tough, but right now, outside of one team, there's really nobody you can say in the National League that you feel the Mets should not beat in a short series. So with that, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, is this the Mets' best chance to win a championship? And we can't predict the future, but in the first 5 years of Steve Cohen ownership. We'll talk about that and more right after this. The Talking Mets podcast is available on many outlets, but the most popular is Apple Podcast. Hi, I'm Mike Silva, the host of the Talking Mets podcast, and I encourage you to leave a review about the program on Apple. Just rate it 1 to 5 stars, hopefully a 5 because why wouldn't you? And then if you have time, leave a review. It helps the podcast continue to grow and encourages others to take a listen. You can also email me at MikeSilva@TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G, TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Hope to hear from you soon. And enjoy the rest of the show. All right, we're back. So I teased before the break how is this the Mets' best chance? And these are the kind of conversations you're starting to have as we are in that let's go get it done phase of the baseball season. And the Mets playing at, especially since the All-Star break, a high level. We know part of that was these acquisitions that who would have thunk guys like Tyler Naquin and Daniel Vogelbach.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop. And even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand. And even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow. I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Even giving up, I thought, a useful reliever like Colin Holderman, who the Mets could have very well used this homestand, could have brought them an elite offensive player, a guy that's been designated for assignment. Now, he doesn't hit lefties, but majority of what you're going to see is right-handers. Naquin, you know, when he plays against righties, he hits at a really good level. Darren Ruff provides the righty equivalent of Vogelbach. Maybe not to the same level, but he had a big hit on Friday. So you see that high level, and you're saying to yourself, between that, surviving some injury scares, like almost Pete breaking his hand or the car accident with Alonso in spring training. And, it just seems like things are going well for the Mets. So the first reason why this might be their best chance has nothing to do with anything data-driven or logical. It's just this feeling. And it's a similar feeling to what I had in 06. Now, I know what happened in 06. I know. But it's very similar. There was 99 and 2000, but the Mets in those seasons had teams that were considered better than them. They weren't the prohibitive favorite. Even 99, people thought the Braves were better, and they probably were. I mean, I think that Mets team was the best Mets team before this year, in my opinion. I think that team might have been better than 06, and that's a different debate we could have on another day, that 99 team. And they got badly snake-bitten in the Braves series in the postseason, but another story for another day. 1986, that whole thing. But to me, 06, the Mets, there was very few teams, including the Yankees that year, that I thought the Mets shouldn't beat in a short series. And it was such a clear path, and everything was going well, even with all the injuries, Pedro going down. They got El Duque. El Duque looked like he was ready to retire, and he was disinterested in Arizona, which he was. Comes in and pitches like an ace. Oh, they lose their pitching for the postseason. John Main and Ollie Perez step up. John Valentin's big year. Cliff Floyd's out. They go out and get Sean Green. Eddie Chavez has a career year. LaDuca. Everything came together. It was maybe Beltran's best year of his career, MVP year. Living up, coming out of the same situation as Lindor, a disappointing first year, and he comes and has this MVP season. So that's what you're seeing here. The crazy comebacks. Guys stepping up in the bullpen, like Ottavino. Diaz, the maturation of Diaz. I mean, what you saw last night, where Diaz, for the first time in a long time, didn't have command of a slider, but you saw him navigate a sweaty inning when he didn't have his best stuff. The only other time in recent memory was maybe the Texas save, which was not nearly as scary as that because there was a little bit more rope in that game. That was a 1-0 game that he got to get out of yesterday. And a big-time hitter. I mean, don't be fooled by Castellanos' numbers. He's a big-time hitter. That's a guy you don't want to see up in a big spot. I know he's had a bad year. But Diaz, the difference I thought I saw with Diaz is first he was commanding his fastball and locating it. So it wasn't like he was just giving in and I think Ron Darling said this. He was slowing the game down. He wasn't trying to just bulldoze his way through it. That's what you do if you're a good pitcher. When the things move fast on you, you back off and you turn down the temperature. And even though he didn't have real great command of his slider, he still kept going to it and he still stayed consistent with that 50-50 and he really worked off of it. And that's what he does. He tries to work off the slider. In the past, we'd always work off the fastball. The slider would be the out pitch. So it wasn't like the Phillies could sit back and go, all right, we got him. He doesn't have a slider tonight. He's going to be the old Diaz. He located that fastball, and he still was able to get the big swing and miss or the strike on the slider when he needed it. And he got through that inning. When you see that, you're like, this is something that's going on. This team has got something going on. And then Jacob deGrom, I mean, this guy's not even pitching more than six innings. This is like Pedro Martinez. Like, this is like how the whole debate with Grady Little and Pedro and how long do you keep him in. I think that's going to be a postseason debate. There is going to be a postseason game where they're going to pull deGrom and something bad might happen And I hope it doesn't happen, but we're going to have a Buck Showalter, Grady Little conversation maybe. Hopefully it doesn't happen. But could you feel it? But things are going so well that you think no matter what they touch, I mean, whatever Buck touches, it turns to gold. I mean, DeGrom is having, and you don't know what's going to happen at the end of this year. DeGrom is having a great, great, great season. So everything's coming together. The league, outside of the Dodgers, so it's a little bit different than 06 where the Dodgers are clearly the favorites. Outside of the Dodgers, there's really no team the Mets shouldn't beat, with Scherzer and DeGrom lined up a couple of times in a short series with the way Diaz is pitching. And then you could maybe throw some of your starters in a bullpen so you don't have to sit through the Michael Givens experience. Or worry about Seth Lugo not having his curveball and his inability to warm up. Or, you know, what the finickiness of his stuff. You know, you have a whole different scenario once the postseason bell rings. I mean, the field is open. It's the Dodgers. I mean, that's what it comes down to. The team that Cohen wants to be versus the upstart that's just coming around. You know, kind of where the Dodgers were when they first were bought by the Guggenheim Group. So you have that similar field as 06. You have all these intangibles happening that we can't explain that are just, you know, coming together. Guys having great years, wild wins, lucky breaks. You know, they don't get Schwarber for the series. Sometimes that happens. Gary Cohen talked about that. And that's kind of where I thought about this. And then you have the field where you look and you're like, yeah, the Braves are tough but beatable. Yeah, you know, they're champs. The Phillies are tough but beatable. Cardinals, I think, are very tough but beatable. The Mets have proven that. And, you know, San Diego, we were anointing them with the Soto Bell trade. But like I said, when you upheaval your whole, you know, being at the trade deadline and go from last place to first place and you're trying to get to know this team and get to, you know, get it done at the same time, it could happen. You have the Cespedeses of the world that don't care. But the kind of turnover that you saw with what the amount of offense the Padres brought in, You're asking for a lot of guys to and a key component to figure themselves out. And now the guy you thought you were getting back, maybe the best of all of them, Tatis Jr., you ain't going to see him till June of next year. And I think he's ineligible. I don't know if he's ineligible for next year's postseason. I mean, think about that. I mean, how does that work? He misses this postseason. Does that mean he's ineligible for next postseason because the suspension goes into next year? I'd have to look into that. So the Padres are beatable. Tough, but beatable. You know, they're tough, they're scary, but beatable. It's not as clear-cut as 06, but it's got some similarities. And then there's the third reason why you almost have to win. Like, that's where the pressure and the get-it-done pressure happens. So Danny Abriano, who is the senior editorial producer over at SNY's Mets, I call it Mets blog, it's SNY.TV Mets and things like that. You know, he wrote about how DeGrom, Diaz, Bassett. I mean, the Mets, and this is going to be a big part of our early offseason conversation. Whenever this craziness ends, whether it ends in a championship, no playoffs, unlikely, or a flameout, or a heartbreak, near miss, the first thing we're going to be talking about as we put our GM and play GM cap here on the Talking Mets podcast in the offseason, when it'll be the fall and it won't be too cold yet. It's not like when we have these shows when it's, you know, 12 degrees and I'm like, hey, let's talk about the back into the bullpen while everybody else is out throwing snowballs around and shoveling. But it'll be the early, you know, offseason where we play GM, and the Mets have Nimmo and Bassett and DeGrom and Diaz and pretty much their entire bullpen. They have a ton of free agents. And in order to keep this band together, it's a possibility they need a payroll well north of $300 million, maybe $340, $350. Will Steve Cohen do that? You know, there's a value in some of these veterans that are expensive, that are filling roles, versus going into your farm system and bringing up a known guy, no name. You have to do it. You have to incorporate young players. You know, maybe a Darren Ruff could be replaced by a cheaper version in Vientos as McNeil becomes more expensive, as Alonso becomes more expensive. That's why you need, and that's why the payoff, I believe, at the trade deadline for the Mets, not giving anything up, or giving up a Matthew Allen type or top five prospect for Robertson, where they felt would give them incremental improvement, which I don't disagree, I agree with, but we'll leave that alone, is that you have this capital that you can now say, okay, I have some options with Alvarez and with Vientos, and maybe Beatty, who's in AAA now, you know, you look around, you don't have to go out and have veterans for depth because you may have it in a minimum player in Beatty or Alvarez or what have you. Maybe you're able to look at your catching situation and say, okay, I love the catch and framing of McCann, but, you know, I can't, I have to invest that in Diaz. I mean, you're going to have two guys in DeGrom and Diaz that may have record-setting contracts. DeGrom to hit the $50 million mark per season for a player. I think that was probably his goal. I mean, you could easily, if he stays healthy, I don't think anybody's going to give him 6 or 7 years, but I could see a 4 years with an option, you know, maybe 5, 250 kind of deal. Diaz, you know, the top closers make $16, $17 million. He's probably going to try to go 480. I mean, alone those two guys are going to cost you $70 million. You haven't even gotten to Bassett. You haven't gotten to Walker, who's going to want to make, you know, $15 million a year. You know, Carrasco has an option, I believe. Let me see this just to make sure. I think there's a $10 million option of some sort. So, you know, maybe you bring him back because, you know, the real problem is you almost have to win this year and reinvest in this pitching. Because if you go for it this year, or you weren't going to reinvest in this pitching, why didn't you just go all in and try to win? You have to invest in this pitching. They don't have an acceptable replacement for Diaz. They don't have enough starters. You know, Peterson and McGill are huge downgrades from DeGrom. Yeah, you have Scherzer, so it's not like you've lost an ace, but you've lost that, you know, 1-2 punch. And, you know, look, it goes on both sides. You know, does Nimmo want to come back? Does DeGrom want to come back? Do they want to play the market? Do they like, similar to what Syndergaard? What Syndergaard said this weekend is critically important because it's a real, honest, open lesson, and you as fans should hear it and listen to it. He didn't like the temperature in New York. It's not for everybody. And people come here for the green and figure, you know, say, I'll figure it out, but they don't. And when you have an opportunity to get the green here or somewhere else and it's the same and you get out of this environment, you know, there's not much a Steve Cohen could do at that point. He can't change the zip code. He's not, that's not realistic. Now, the good vibes and Buck and all the nonsense that has surrounded this team, thanks to Epler's moves, Buck's influence, who's a perfect mouthpiece, gets Alderson out of the fray. I think Epler, if you heard from him more, might annoy you more. So the fact that Buck could play that, you know, Terry Collins role, but actually be a competent manager is huge. And it's taken the temperature and made it normal here again. It's normal media coverage because even if they tried to get clownish, it wouldn't work. I mean, trust me, they still want to get clownish. They haven't changed. The environment hasn't changed. It's that you're not giving them anything. And it's hard to do that. It's hard to achieve that. And there's been a couple of times that it could have went that way. And they've won big series. And then Buck, you know, if he gets someone gets silly with him, he handles it in a way which eliminates any kind of agitation or agendas that could come from covering somebody you don't like. How can you not like Buck Showalter? He talks about his dogs needing music to fall asleep. He talks about Broadway. You know, he might see something at the ball card. Shakira? Email me. I can't. I don't listen to her. I don't know. He talks about her, you know, at that point. So you have quite a bit in the column here that says this might be their best shot. There's a lot of complexities to keep this band together. And then when you start to rely on some of your younger players, and they're going to have to, on the offensive side of the ball, Alvarez and Mauricio and Beatty, you don't know what these guys are going to do. Yeah, you could have him earn a job in spring training. You know, does Beatty push Escobar out of the way and make him a bench player next year? And Escobar becomes that veteran. I always say with a young player, you want a veteran to come in case they flop, like Kelnick flopped. You know, that was something that, you know, Greg Jeffries came in first full year. They had traded Wally Backman already. And Jeffries really, you know, Davey stuck with him back in the late 80s. And I've talked to people around that team who've said they probably should have sent him down. It might have done him some good. Would have been a humbling experience, but they also traded their depth and a popular one at that in Backman. So you want to keep that depth and you want to give these guys kind of a safety net when it comes down to it. But with DeGrom and Diaz specifically having these all-time seasons on a free agent walk year, it's a perfect storm. God bless them. They're going to get paid. I'm so proud of Diaz, by the way. I mean, DeGrom, I'm a little surprised because I said, okay, he hasn't pitched in a year. And he had this the shoulder thing with the bone, which anybody who had it, you know, said it wasn't the end of the world, but they are treating him cautiously. He had the ligament issue. He's had, you know, it depends on who you look at. Some say he has great mechanics. Some say he doesn't. Sometimes it's hard. But, I mean, his execution is at a level that I've never seen before. I mean, just think about it. I've never seen this before. You know, getting a hit is an accomplishment. Fouling a ball off is accomplishment. We're not talking about beating him. If we could get this guy, we could get to a situation where the Mets could get this guy to seven plus innings, it really makes it almost impossible to beat them. And you put a crooked number, I mean, the team is basically averaging 5 runs a game since they made the changes and moved on from JD and Dom and lengthened the lineup. That's more plenty. I mean, yeah, even with the shaky, leaky bullpen and the nerve-wracking nature of May and Lugo and Givens and much lesser degree Ottavino. Ottavino has been a godsend, really. I mean, he's doing what you expected from Lugo. And Lugo's doing what you expected from Ottavino. So this very well might be the Mets' best chance because of those reasons. Tangible reasons like things are just happening that you can't explain. Wild wins and hot players and, you know, walk-offs and things like that. And then you have the field in front of you, which looks pretty open, and there's one cowboy that stands in the way of you and the World Series, and that's a big one, and that's the Dodgers. And then you still have the world champs, but, you know, the big boys are the Dodgers. I mean, at another, you know, 110-win, 114-win pace, we saw them out in L.A. They're tough. They're tough. And I think the Mets are tough, too, and I think everybody knows the Mets are tough. They're not just lucky like Spencer Strider says, so that's an interesting thing to think about. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to wrap up. But Fernando Tatis Jr. was suspended this weekend for PEDs. Why? Who cares? Probably he was using it to heal quickly so he could get back from his, I believe it's a shoulder injury because of the bike incident. So he's had a lot of things go against him. A lot of money he's lost, by the way. He's going to lose, something like $20-something million dollars on this thing. So that's a very expensive mistake. But Lindor and the Lindor contract and whatnot came up. We gave Lindor, and I've been giving Lindor's platitudes. But I want to remind everybody that it didn't have to be this way. So we're going to wrap up. We're going to talk about Tatis Jr. and the what if with Francisco Lindor one last time right after this.
Mets fans love Bartolo Colon and remember his home run. But what kind of impact did he really have on the club? Michael Stahl, author of the book Big Sexy, Bartolo Colon in his own words, joined us on the podcast and gave us a pretty good idea.
I got to speak to Terry Collins over the phone, and he contributed a story. And he says the definition of a professional, he's like Bartolo's right there. One of his early starts in Anaheim, where Bartolo just didn't have it, and he gave up like back-to-back-to-back home runs, I think, in like the first inning. And you know what he did? He took his licks, and he stayed in the game until the fifth inning because the bullpen was tired. So, you know, his ERA ballooned up to like 6 or something like that. But, you know, he didn't care. He knew it was best for the team, and he wanted to stay in the game. He told Terry after the first inning, he goes, I'm going to get you into the 7th. And he wound up going 5, but still, like, that was his attitude, and that was, you know, a real testament to him.
Listen to this and more at www.talkingmetspodcast.com.
We're back, final segment here on the Talking Mets podcast. You know, one thing that I have noticed, this tweet came up during the break. This is from New York Mets Stats, and if you don't follow this account, you should. At NYM Stats, they just give out randomly good information. It said, most games allowing 0 runs in a season in Mets history. Of course, 1969, 28, no surprise, 68, surprise, 25. You know, that's the year of the pitcher. 88 is after that. I remember that season. I mean, tons of, you know, Ojeda and Darling and Gooden and Fernandez, like just shut down starting pitching. David Cohn. 2010, that's interesting. Not a great year for the Mets. I was up there. 85, 76, a surprisingly good 70s, late 70s season for the Mets where they won over 80 games. And, you know, before trading Seaver, so I'm sure Seaver and Kuzman had a lot to do with that. 2022 is now tied with, is that 16th, 16 shutouts, or zero runs, I should say. And 1998, it keeps popping up. When they have these best record of 1998 keeps popping up, and that's when Piazza came over. And I didn't think of that team because they had to make so many changes in 99, bringing in Ventura specifically and Ricky Henderson, because offensively they were so challenged, I felt, at times. It was basically all-time season by Olerud. Piazza getting hot down the stretch, Fonzie coming into his own, a little bit of Brian McCray, a little bit of Tony Phillips. You know, was Carl Everett was on that team? No, Carl Everett was traded. No, Carl Everett was traded in 97. They traded him after the 97, which was a mistake. I know they traded him because of an off-the-field issue, and he turned out to sometimes have his own issues, but they needed his bat in that lineup. They got nothing for him. But I look at this 98 team. I don't want to get too deep into it, but they stand out. More so sometimes than 99 or 2000 on these lists of when these stats of pitching and record and just amazing, you know, that you don't think of the 98 team that had that bad last week of the season against the Expos and the Marlins and just couldn't get the job done in Atlanta to make the postseason. They were a dangerous team. They went into the Astrodome and Piazza got his 200th home run and beat a very, very good Astros team, including beating a closer that would be their closer years later in Billy Wagner, who was at the height of his dominance in 1998. So just something interesting. All right, Lindor. I've talked about this. Look, I don't dislike Francisco Lindor at all. And I am beyond over the moon ecstatic that you have his defense up the middle, that his bat now is starting to play. Look, you paid him an A-Rod contract. He is playing like A-Rod at shortstop, maybe with a little less power, but he's playing like A-Rod the last 2 months. Specifically since the second half started, the 20 games or so from the second half. Nearly won the ball game on Friday. I thought that ball was going out. Died in center field. Center field's the worst place to hit the ball at Citi Field. If you get one out, you know, you earned it, especially if it goes into that little apple, the home run apple. So I love Lindor. I don't care that he's got a 10-year deal. What I'm saying and what I meant when Andy Martino mentioned in the tweet about Tatis Jr.'s suspension, and how you look at Tatis Jr. now, and how the Mets rushed to sign him, and the benchmark was Tatis's 350, or thereabouts. And I always felt that was kind of this number that was pushed by the media, and I thought there was the pressure from the fans to show them that something had to happen. And everybody says, you think Steve Cohen makes a decision because of what the fans say? Well, he knew, and he was very astute to, you know, they nearly, if it's true, and I don't know why Martino would lie, I mean, they talked about releasing Javi Baez in September because of the thumbs down, which would have been ridiculous after you gave up a first-round pick. And I thought maybe it was a guy that you'd want to resign and then piss Lindor off. So think about that, all that together. You know, but they listened to what the fans have to say, and he knew when they made this deal that if he said, listen, we're not going to get a deal done before spring training, they would get killed. It would be like, oh, it's the Wilpons all over again. They would have got, they were getting killed in the media at that time. And I was totally at that, and I'm never going to, you guys could go back and listen to the tape. It's out there. I never said that they shouldn't sign him. I just said, I'm willing to play this one out because now you got an owner with cash flow. The biggest difference is, you know, look, would I love to lock DeGrom up? And it was a very interesting quote by A-Rod on the John Heyman and Joel Sherman podcast. A-Rod was on a few weeks ago. And he said, the one thing is, once you get to free agency, the agents start to take over. And sometimes the communication with the club then, which you could have more direct, like the Mets saying to Brandon Nimmo, we're interested in talking to you because you're still on the roster, you're still in the clubhouse, goes away, and then you never know what the agent's agenda is. Now, a bit of a pot shot against Boris, who he fired later in his career. And A-Rod was a guy that was malleable and I think allowed people to run his affairs to a much higher level than maybe they should have. But, you know, knowing all that, knowing that, you know, you have an owner with cash flow, I'm okay with going free agency. Now, DeGrom is different because, to me, there was always inventory of shortstops. I was unsure if he was the guy that was being advertised. I know DeGrom is the guy that was advertised. So there's differences between the two. And I just said, look, I think if you had waited this, the struggles that he had, maybe he would have bounced on New York. And so that's the other thing. So we're assuming he wanted to stay. So after the kind of year, and that's the one thing we'll never know, after the kind of year that he had last year, even with the great September 11th series and the three home runs against the Yankees, which was kind of his coming out, with the thumbs down, like, think about everything that happened. There's a very good chance that they might not have even brought him back. Maybe they would have went a different route. Maybe they would have went after, you know, Corey Sager or something like that, or Carlos Correa. Who knows? Who knows what happens if they let? So let's assume he wants to stay despite all the nonsense and the garbage. You probably could have got him for, you know, maybe a 7-year deal, $25 million a year, save $10 million, which now with Lindor making $35 and you got to hope he stays at this level. This is the kind of level that you need because it's a lot of money. It's impacting their ability at times to keep that payroll at the Cohen tax. And I know you say, well, Steve Cohen's rich. He doesn't care. Well, yeah, he does. At some point, it's hard to make money on these ball clubs, especially when you have a payroll that goes to a certain level, unless the revenues are there. Now, they're building a team, and Cohen's smart. He's building, and they're talking about building up around the ballpark and things like that. It's going to only make this team more valuable and more profit centers so that they can have a sustainable winner and have the revenue stream like the Dodgers. The reason the Dodgers and the Yankees have the kind of payrolls that they have is because they have the revenue streams there. At times, even though the Mets are a big market team, you could just tell from the advertising over the years at Citi Field, they're not necessarily the most desired advertising destination. I could tell you flat out, I knew somebody who used to work for WOR when the Mets were on WOR before they went back to the the WFAN family on 880. And it was very hard to sell advertising for the Mets even after they were in the pennant. They won the pennant in 2015. Got a little easier. I mean, going into the pennant season of 2015 was very difficult. Very difficult to sell advertising for a variety of reasons, which I no reason to get into that right now. And some of that had to do with the prior ownership. So, you know, I got roasted when I brought the point that Andy basically said the Mets could have saved a lot of money here. That's really the roundabout, long-winded way. The Mets could have saved a lot of money if only they knew what Tatis was. Now, nobody has a crystal ball. My whole point was they never should have blinked on that level, make the guy prove that he could play. Who knows what kind of season he would have had on a contract year. But, you know, as I'm going through it, and it's a moot point. Maybe it's a waste to round out the show because we've had this conversation so long. But listen, we talked about it in the last segment. You have critically important free agent decisions that could make this good team, this exciting team, this very likable team, this team that is heading into a new era where they are an East Coast Dodgers and every bit the Yankees. That could go away in a snap if you lose Edwin Diaz and DeGrom, because you recalibrate, you're never going to replace those kind of seasons. Even if this might be Diaz's best season ever he'll have. Another reason that this might be their best chance, right? You're having career year. How much more does Scherzer have? You don't know. Like, so to me, that money, you know, I think Buck's 4-year deal is their chance to win. Because I think once his 4-year deal is up, I don't know if he would stick around. I think you better start looking at his successor. Because I could see after the 4-year deal, the Mets needing to take a small dip to move forward. I don't want to say what a total rebuild, but maybe have a down year or two to recalibrate. Because it's hard to, you can't replace Hall of Famers, you know, as they get older. So, you know, it's something like that. Well, so that's just something to talk about. It's interesting when it's all said and done. What is the Lindor contract? How is that impact going to be on them keeping all their players out there? All right, that's all I got for you. Big series coming up. This is the final countdown to, you know, really put this division in, I don't want to say cruise control, but an open field where, you know, you got enough distance between you and the next, you know, they're not lapping anybody, but they got enough distance where they could comfortably then manage the bullpen effectively, not push Diaz too much, manage injuries. It looks like Guillerme's in pretty bad shape. I was looking at some post-game comments. And, you know, September is a little bit of a, you know, schedule gets easier. You don't want to take that for granted, but just stay where you are, and then look, you're not going to get any help. It has yet to prove that any team is giving you any help for both the Phillies and the Braves. And as long as you take care of business, back to that taking care of business theme, it's going to be really hard for the Phillies or the Braves, even when they beat up on these other teams, because the Mets could beat up on the teams like the Reds and the Pirates and the Cubs just as well. And away you go. So, all right, want to thank everybody for tuning in to this edition of the Talking Mets podcast. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media. And do the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. And I want to welcome in the good folks and thank them from the Fansided Podcasting Network as well as RisingApple.com. I am your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your week and buckle up. Another big week of baseball ahead. Let's see where we stand next week, 6 o'clock on a Sunday. It's going to be a very defining week in the 2022 season. It's truly go get 'em time. Till then, take care, everybody. Meet the Mets. 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 Head for the park.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.